Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
This guy is a machine. All he does is work out and pick winners.
Early Odds with Joe Ostrowski.
Oregon's down by 12. They're on the 45-yard line with no timeouts.
Oregon's got an all-American field goal kicker.
Why didn't somebody tell me?
Chicago sports betting.
Touchdown, Ohio State. There are some folks who are celebrating and others who are saying, you've got to be kidding me.
Kind of know what I'm thinking about.
Over or under?
Under would be the key word. Hello?
Bet with an edge.
He'd find out the kind of inside stuff nobody else knew, and that's what he put his money on. He even figured out the different bounce you got off the different kinds of wood they used on college basketball courts, you know?
Early Odds with Joe Ostrowski.
A friend of mine is very smart, said I've been very lucky with gambling. I've never won.
Welcome back in. Jake Hassan once again filling in for Joe Ostrowski. This is Early Odds on 670 The Score. And like I promised last week, I am not solo for an hour. You get to listen to somebody else talk a little bit. Ryan Horvath joins me now to talk some college football. You know him from BetMGM Tonight, Monday through Friday, 7 to 11 Eastern PM every night. Ryan, what's up, buddy? Nice to talk to you.
Jake. Great to talk to you as usual. Joe really slacking this summer. Where is Joe? Does he got a baseball tournament? Is he just on vacation? Is he at a Grateful Dead festival? Like, I feel like you're doing a great job holding it down, but anytime I listen on Saturday mornings, I never hear Joe O anymore.
Yeah, you know, I went into Jewel the other day and they had his face on milk boxes, so I'm starting to get a little worried. I mean, maybe this is just my show now. It's hard to say, but allegedly he'll be back next week. I believe he's gallivanting around the Midwest doing some travel baseball coaching. So Joe will be back eventually, but appreciate the kind words, though. Yeah, holding it down here. This is Early Odds. So, Horvy, I mean, first things first, we got to talk about conference realignment this college football season, because that's the big story. That's everything that we've heard about. How are you approaching this college season with all of these teams moving, with all of the conference realignment? Does it change how you're approaching betting the playoff? And we'll get into that and how that's changing this year, too. But let's start with the conference realignment. Anybody that you like more or like less because of that? Anybody that you're targeting more or less because of the realignment? How are you approaching this?
Yeah, it's a great question, man, because like you said, I mean, the SEC, now you add Oklahoma, you add Texas, so that's really interesting. Kind of locally, obviously, the Big Ten, because you have Northwestern, you have Illinois, although we don't recognize Northwestern, of course, here on this show. Just kidding. But, I mean, you know, I'm really excited, man, and I'm really excited also. I mean, you get the addition of some Pac-12 schools. You got UCLA joining the Big Ten. You got USC. You got Oregon, and then you have Washington. And Oregon's absolutely loaded this season. So is Ohio State. What I like, though, is no longer do we have to watch a Big Ten title game with, like, a 7-win Iowa team going against a 12-win, 11-win Ohio State or Michigan team, because we've gotten rid of now the divisions and the championship game. So I think this kind of opens it up. You know, if you do want to play some futures in the Big Ten, I really like Ohio State, man. I get why people love Oregon. I'm a big Dan Lanning fan. He could recruit. He could hit the transfer portal. Last year, won every single game, except for they couldn't beat Washington in those two matchups. They're going to be absolutely loaded. Even though they lost Bo Nix, they bring in Dylan Gabriel, who, like, the first 8 weeks of the season at Oklahoma last year looked like a Heisman candidate. They're absolutely loaded. But, like, Ohio State had almost an NFL offseason, right? They got Quinshon Judkins from Ole Miss, who's a stud running back. The only position that I'm not sold on, actually, for Ohio State, because they're completely loaded, is the quarterback position. They bring in Will Howard. I just, like, doesn't give me the C.J. Stroud, you know, Justin Fields type vibes. Was solid at Kansas State, but he's, like, more of a game manager. But like I said, man, you have Judkins, you have Trayvon Henderson, both in the backfield. Even though you lose Marvin Harrison, they're always stacked at the wide receiver position, and they got Ibuka coming back. And then on the defensive side of the ball, it's now year three for Jim Knowles. He's completely turned that defense around. Their defensive end, JTT, is awesome. Jack Sawyer's really good. He's going to be an NFL stud. So I like Ohio State to win the Big Ten. But as far as win totals, man, you might laugh at this. I actually really like Nebraska. I never buy in that Nebraska's back, but this is what Matt Rhule does. Now it's year two. Last year, Nebraska went 5-7 year one in Matt Rhule, but this is kind of what he does. He did the same thing at Baylor. Like, you know, year one, he looks to build the culture, rebuild the culture, kind of build his program. And then year two, usually they win. And like, their defense was really good last year under Tony White. They run that 3-3-5 scheme, and they really improved. They gave up 111 fewer yards, 9 points fewer than they did in 2022. And they got a bunch of studs coming back. They got Ty Robinson back. They got Butler back. They got a bunch of guys, man. They combined for 20 and a half tackles for loss, 11 sacks. So the defense is going to be really good. And then on the offensive side of the ball, that was their issue last year. That's why they won five games. They only averaged 18 points per game. That's because they had Jeff Sims behind center. They bring in now Dylan Raiola, who's a five-star quarterback. People compare him to Pat Mahomes. If you watch his game, he kind of looks like Pat Mahomes. I can't compare anybody to Pat Mahomes. But if you look at like four of their losses last year, dude, were by 3 points. And in three of those, they lost the same exact way. They either threw an interception at midfield, they lost on a field goal miss at the gun. And you look at three of those four losses, they only gave up 13 points. And it was the Minnesota, Maryland, and Iowa. So now, you know, with a revamped offensive line, with a better quarterback, I think they're going to be able to at least average like 28 points per game. And if the defense still only gives up, you know, 18 to 20, I think this is an 8-win team. You look at the schedule, they kick off the season against UTEP. Then it's Colorado, Northern Iowa, Illinois, Purdue, Rutgers. I think Nebraska might be a 9-10 win team for Matt Rhule this year. So I played them over 7.5 pretty big. I think that's my favorite win total right now in the Big Ten.
Yeah, Nebraska's still sitting at 7.5, a little bit of juice to the over. Raiola, 100-1 for Heisman. You gonna bet that?
Big no, number. I'm gonna stay away from that. You know, I hate the term game manager. He might be more of a game manager because they have two really good running backs too. I did play a Heisman future, though. I like Tennessee's quarterback. Moving over to the SEC really quick, everybody's buying into Ole Miss and loves Ole Miss. And I think, like, dude, if Lane Kiffin's ever going to win a national championship or win the SEC, it will be this year. That team's loaded. I like their quarterback, Jackson Dart. But I just feel like they're a little bit too overhyped, you know, in the market especially. I like Tennessee. Tennessee's issue last year was they lost Hendon Hooker, so Joe Milton was behind center. They had a really strong run game, but it just wasn't your typical Josh Heupel passing attack. Now they bring in Nico Iamaleava. He's 16-1 right now to win Heisman. He played in the bowl game against Iowa and was just absolutely awesome. But like I said, he was a five-star. Tennessee's defense is actually going to be really good, but you could still get the price on Nico, Tennessee's quarterback, 16-1. You know, I really like their offense, man. They have Chris Brazel transferring over from Tulane. He caught, I believe, like 44 balls last year there. And 2 years ago in this offense, Hendon Hooker had him averaging 46 points per game. Even with Joe Milton playing terrible last year, they averaged 31. And like I said, like, Nico played in the Citrus Bowl, hung 35 points on Iowa, who was a top five defense last year, had 151 yards passing, and then ran for 3 touchdowns. Still rushed for 51 yards, and he was sacked 6 times. Heupel called this their deepest wide receiver room ever. They got Squirrel White back. They have 3 starters back on the offensive line, including Cooper Mays and John Campbell, who are both going to be probably first-round picks. I like Tennessee a lot to win 10 games, and I really like Nico Iamaleava. Tough name to say to win Heisman, 16-1. So no Raiola for me this year, but I do like Nico, and I'm pretty high on Tennessee, man, in the SEC this year.
All right, you mentioned Big Ten. You like Ohio State. They're the favorite to win the Big Ten. Tennessee's 18-20-1 range for the SEC. Are they your sleeper? I know, obviously, Georgia's the favorite, about 2-1, then Texas, Alabama. Is Tennessee your sleeper there, or is it just going to be chalk? Is it just going to be Georgia in that conference?
I'm actually, yeah, I'm going to try to play against Georgia, which is always scary. I mean, we know that they're going to be absolutely loaded on defense. You know, the last couple of years, I've been trying to make the same case against Georgia. It's like they have a lot of distractions, man. A lot of off the field distractions. Like, is everybody that attends Georgia or steps foot on that campus like into drag racing? I feel like they have more like speeding tickets and off the field stuff going on than any other program right now. They've kind of become like the new Florida State. But like, Kirby's a great coach. The defense is going to be top 10 in the country. I really like their quarterback, Carson Beck. He's getting a lot of love in the Heisman market, I know. Five-star quarterback, was really solid last year. Like, let's be honest, they were the best team in the country last year. They just got tripped up by Alabama. If they would have played Michigan on a neutral field, they would have been 4.5 to 5-point favorites in that game, even though Michigan won the national championship. So they're probably the safest pick. But yeah, I like Tennessee. I do like Ole Miss. A lot of people like Texas. You know what scares me about Texas? They lost a ton of studs, but also I'm not completely sold on Quinn Ewers. I watched the spring game, and I feel like Arch Manning might be the better quarterback right now, but you have to start Ewers. But, yeah, man, I think Tennessee would probably be my sleeper team. But like you said, Georgia's probably the safe pick. I want to wait and see what Alabama looks like without Nick Saban. Kalen DeBoer is a great coach, and he does have, obviously, you know, his starting quarterback coming back, who's a Heisman candidate. But I got to see it first before I'm, like, rushing to bet any futures on Bama. So, and then LSU. Like, I need to see what that defense looks like. Last year, that's why Jaden Daniels was your Heisman. Every game, man, he had to hang 50 on the board just to give him a chance. They have a bunch of studs, but, like, I got to see it to believe it again. Like, Brian Kelly completely changed and revamped the whole coaching staff on the defensive side of the ball, but I'm not sold on them. So I think, yeah, I guess Tennessee would be my sleeper team in the SEC when I think about it.
All right, with Ryan Horvath, BetMGM tonight. Catch him Monday through Friday, 7 to 11 Eastern. A true football mind if I've ever heard or seen one. Let's talk about the playoff, Horvy, because it's changing a lot, and it feels like any kind of historical stuff, you're going to have to kind of throw out the window from the last, 10 years, because this thing's going to change a lot, and the landscape changes a ton. I mean, right now, obviously, the heavy hitters, Ohio State, Georgia, Oregon, all heavy favorites to make the playoff, but how are you looking at this? How do you think this is going to go now when you look at either the odds or trying to bet a champion? Are you going to wait until like halfway through the season? How are you playing this when it comes to the playoff and the eventual champion?
Yeah, it's another great question, man, because like now you could play more. So, you know, I was never big into playing the national championship futures in July and August in college football, you know, but now like you could hit different markets. Like you could play teams just to make the playoff. So I did take a stab with Utah to win the national championship when they were 66-1, but I really like them to make the playoff, man, because the Pac-12 is officially dead. They go over to the Big 12. Texas leaves the Big 12. Oklahoma leaves the Big 12. Utah, every single year, they have one of the best head coaches in college football in Kyle Whittingham. They have a top 15 tough place to play in the country. Nobody wants to go play there. And they also bring back their quarterback, Cam Rising, who missed all of last year. He might be a Heisman finalist, man. They also bring back, you know, Brent Keithy, who's their stud tight end slash wide receiver, their best playmaker. And they picked up Dorian Singer from USC in the transfer portal. I was watching their spring game. He caught a 72-yard touchdown pass. I kind of like them to make the playoff, man, in the Big 12. They're going to have some tough games. There are some tough teams. Kansas State will be tough. Oklahoma State will be tough. But the Big 12 takes a huge step back, losing Texas and Oklahoma. So that's what I'm looking to do. I'm looking to find teams that I think could sneak into the playoff. Another team, as crazy as this sounds, you could get like 6-1 odds, 7-1 odds, would be maybe Memphis. You know, like you're going to have one of these smaller schools have the automatic bid, and then they're going to get absolutely crushed. But they won 10 games last year and bring back like their entire offense. So that's what I'm looking to do. Find teams that are going to make the playoff rather than playing national championship odds right now. Because again, man, like, yeah, Georgia's great, but they're also overvalued. Ohio State's great, but are they better than Oregon? Like, that's going to be a tough matchup. And if they have two losses, are they going to get into the playoff? Most likely. Texas, they lost a lot of guys. Ole Miss, do I fully trust Lane Kiffin to invest money in a national championship future? No. Michigan's defense is going to be awesome, but they lose Blake Corum, they lose J.J. McCarthy, and they lose Jim Harbaugh. But they could still make the playoff because of that defense. They gave up 9 points per game, and they, you know, I think Sherrod Moore will be a really good coach. Notre Dame, that's a team I'm staying away from. The first win total, Jake, that I bet, even as a Notre Dame fan, was under 10.5 wins for Notre Dame, Leonard Riley comes over from Duke. He's already hurt. He hasn't taken one snap. He's already hurt. He was hurt all of last year. I really like Marcus Freeman. I think the defense is going to be solid, but I just, man, I don't think Notre Dame, even with that schedule, is an 11-12 win team. So I faded them. And then the last team that, like, nobody's talking about, you asked me about SEC sleepers, Missouri. Like, Missouri brings back that entire team that won double-digit games. But, yeah, that's what I'd look to do, man, is maybe, like, find some teams that you have a shot, think you have a shot, at making the playoff, not so much winning the whole thing, though.
Yeah, Notre Dame minus 170 to make the playoff right now. Michigan plus money, Ole Miss plus money, Missouri almost 2-1. So a little bit of hashtag value there maybe when you're betting the playoff. When it comes to the actual games, and obviously this is a long ways away at this point, but do you think this is going to kind of be, because you mentioned it, alluded to it a little bit there in your answer, that even if some of these small schools do get in, like a Memphis, say, that then it's just, okay, they play Georgia and just play Georgia at whatever the spread is because they're just going to dump truck them. Like, great, nice story, but now you're here, now you have to actually play real schools. Is this just how that's going to go? Like, is there going to be a kind of March Madness-y element to it, or is it just going to be, once we're in, it's going to be chalk?
I do think we'll get some upsets. Like, I don't know if Tulane's going to beat Georgia, right? Or, like, Memphis is going to be able to beat Georgia. And the last two national championship games, I've actually laid, like, a lot of money on both favorites. Everybody falls in love with the underdog story. Everybody loved the Horned Frogs, the Hypo Toad, or whatever the hell we were calling them.
Hypno Toad.
TCU that year. Yeah, there we go. And they got absolutely just boat raced. And that was the easiest bet I've ever placed. Georgia, 13.5-point favorites. That game was over in the first quarter. Last year, kind of the same situation. People loved Washington. They loved Pennix. They loved DeBoer. But Michigan was clearly the better team on a neutral field. I do think we'll see some upsets. The Boise State team from a couple of years ago, or, you know, like the Appalachian State team that went into the Big House and beat Michigan. Because that's the other thing, you know, is a lot of these games, some of these games aren't going to be played on neutrals in the playoffs, so you'll have home field advantage. I do think we'll get some upsets. I don't know that it's coming this year. It might come a little bit later on, but even like 2 years ago in the bowl games, we saw Tulane beat USC with Caleb Williams. But I'll probably be laying like, yeah, some big numbers with some chalky teams like Georgia if they do face off like with some of these smaller schools, because I don't know how that's going to look, man. I can't wait to see what it looks like. I always argued against the college football playoff. Now I'm excited. It means more football. And last year is a great example of why we needed to expand the playoff, because Florida State, I know they got absolutely dump trucked in the bowl game, but they did deserve to be there. They were an undefeated team in the ACC. I know they lost their quarterback, Jordan Travis, but like at the end of the day, they were undefeated, so they should have been rewarded. I initially thought like it would take away though from the regular season, because the NFL is great, but you could lose six games and still make the playoffs, like the Bengals a couple years ago, and make a run to the Super Bowl. In college football, you lose a game or two, your season's over. So every single Saturday means that much more, and we only get 12 games. Each team only gets 12 games, so that was my argument against the playoff. But now I'm just excited, man, especially because college football is no longer college football. It's the minor leagues to the NFL with NIL, with the transfer portal. That's the toughest part about betting this stuff, like especially preseason, is you don't know. You forget like where half of these guys are. I forget like Tyler Van Dyke, who's been at Miami for what seems like a decade, is now the starting quarterback at Wisconsin. You know, I mean, It's kind of crazy. Grayson McCall, who's been at Coastal Carolina, is now the starting quarterback for NC State. So it's like no longer college football, man. Everybody's on a new team every year. So I guess I am excited for the playoff.
It definitely throws a wrench into it and throws something new at us. So it's always going to be more things to bet on, more things to consume, which is always what we're looking for. Let's do a little bit of Heisman really quick. I know you mentioned you like Nico Iamaleava. He's about 14-15-1. Is there anyone further down the board that you can see entering this race, or is it just going to be kind of the guys at the top? Because you have Dylan Gabriel, the favorite, followed by Carson Beck. Gabriel's about 7-1, Beck plus 750. Quinn Ewers gets to that 10-1 range. Is there anyone super deep that you're watching that you're like, okay, if this guy has a couple of big games, then I'm going to bet him at a big number?
Yeah, great question, man. And like what I like, and that's what I really want to see, because you asked me, like with the conference realignment, does that change anything in like the way that I'm going to bet college football this season? But it does I feel like it has to change the way that you look at the Heisman market, because the criteria is always you have to have a ridiculous season. It usually goes to a quarterback. Now it's been a while since we've seen a running back or skill position player win the award. But usually you have to be on at least a 10-win team. You know, like Jaden Daniels last year was on a double-digit win team, even though LSU didn't live up to expectations. So you have to be on a solid team. You have to put up big numbers. And now with the expanded playoff, you almost wonder, even if you have 2-3 losses and you get into the playoff, can you win the Heisman? And most likely you can. So you could go down the board a little bit. I brought up Cam Rising. He's 40-1 right now, the quarterback from Utah. I mean, the last full season, he threw like 25 touchdowns, 6 picks, and also rushed for 500 yards. And that was coming off an injury. So I like him. I feel like the value pick would be Cam Ward, 20-1. Cam Ward's now at Miami, which is always scary, trusting Miami and like Mario Cristobal after what we saw again last year at Miami. But I really like them. They hit the portal. They recruited really well. If Miami's ever going to be relevant ever again, especially in a weak conference, I think it's this year. And Cam Ward is going to put up some ridiculous numbers. He might end up being a first-round draft pick, man. So I like Cam Ward at 20-1 from Miami. I kind of like Avery Johnson, 25-1 from Kansas State. We talked about Will Howard, who's now the starting quarterback at Ohio State. There's a reason why he's at Ohio State. Kansas State was done with him. They went to Avery Johnson in the bowl game, and he was awesome. He played a little bit in the regular season, mostly in like wildcat packages, but I kind of like him at 25-1. And then the last one that I would maybe look at would be Connor Wegman, the starting quarterback from A&M. A&M has a completely new coaching staff. Mike Elko's in. Jimbo's finally gone with his notebook of plays from 1975. And I think they might be really good, man. Tough matchup to start off the year against Notre Dame. I'm going to be betting A&M really huge. But I like Wegman. He's a five-star quarterback, got hurt last year. I think he's got a legit shot, man. If you're getting like 30-1, 35-1 prices on him, I'd maybe look at him.
All right, and last thing on college here, Horvy, before I throw an NFL question at you to close it. Pick the championship game. Like, who are you finalists? Who's going to meet in the championship game? Georgia, the favorite, obviously, about 3-1. Then Ohio State, 4-1. Oregon, 8-1. Texas, plus 850. Then you get the drop-off. Alabama, Ole Miss, LSU, all in that 15-20-1 range.
All right, I'm going to go with Ohio State beating... God, I hate to be chalky. Right now, I would pick Ohio State over Georgia, though. Like, I love Ohio State's offseason. I'm not the biggest Ryan Day guy. I'm a Notre Dame fan, and he was, you know, yelling at Lou Holtz last season, so kind of lost me there. But I think what he did was – I think he made the smartest decision, man, because he is – like, no longer in college football, if you're a head coach, are you, like, a coach anymore. You're pretty much a politician. That's what it is. It's all about recruiting. It's all about the transfer portal. So he had too much on his plate. And that's why he looked so damn stressed out and his face was so red all last year. Now he gives up play calling duties to Chip Kelly. And say what you want about Chip Kelly, the head coach. Chip Kelly, the offensive mind and play caller in college football, is still top 10 in my opinion. So now he's calling plays. They're completely stacked on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball. If he doesn't win it this year, they're going to be calling for his head, and he might be out, man. Like, seriously, as crazy as that sounds, even though they win double-digit games, they were just in the playoff 2 years ago, should have won that game with Stroud at quarterback, but they missed that field goal. I think this is the year they finally get it done, and he gets his national championship. So I'll go Ohio State over Georgia. It's just so tough to pick against Georgia, man.
All right, let's flip to the pros real quick, the last couple minutes here, Ryan. Or is this just going to be Mahomes and the Chiefs again? Like, are we all just going to do this where we analyze every team and try to pick who could break out, and then at the end of the day, it's just a three-peat?
No. I'll give you my Super Bowl matchup right now. I got the Chiefs going back in the AFC. It's hard to pick against the Chiefs. Unless, like, Aaron Rodgers could stay healthy and the Jets' defense could stay healthy, because on paper, man, that's the best defense in the league, and it's not even close. You know, is Burrow – In the Bengals, like, are they officially back? I don't know. It's been a weird offseason where I thought they were going to move T. Higgins. Now he's playing on the franchise tag. I worry more about their secondary. I love this offseason, though, for the Philadelphia Eagles. I got the Eagles beating the Chiefs. I played Jalen Hurts 14-1 to win MVP. I went over 10.5 wins on the Eagles. I played them to win the Super Bowl. I'm all in, man. I'm not a Nick Sirianni guy. I think he's kind of a doofus. And I thought that was the reason that the team struggled last year, because they lost two really good coordinators, Jonathan Gannon, who's now the head coach in Arizona, and then they lost Shane Steichen, who I think is a really good coach, going to be a really good head coach for Indianapolis. And they had like Matt Patricia running the defense the second half of the season. Now he's gone. Vic Fangio's in after just 1 year in Miami. I don't know what happened there, but I still love Vic Fangio. And then Kellen Moore, it's a prove-it year for Kellen Moore. He'll be calling plays. They bring in Saquon. A.J. Brown gets paid, so now he's happy again. You lose the best center in football history in Jason Kelce, but they're still stacked on the offensive line. And their other issue last year, man, they have a really good pass rush. I like their linebackers enough. But their secondary was terrible. They lost Gardner Johnson. Now they bring him back. And I love their draft. Quinyon Mitchell, I know a lot of people don't watch Maction. He's been the best graded defensive back in college football the last two seasons for like the last 15 years. If you go back, man, and you look at like his Pro Football Focus grade, I think he's going to be a stud. He might be a top five corner in this league. And then I'm a big Cooper DeJean guy. I don't know if he's a safety. I don't know if he's a corner. But you could play him kind of like the Ravens play Kyle Hamilton. I think he's just a weapon. And he might end up being the best kick returner, punt returner in all of football, too. He was Iowa's best player on offense, even though he didn't play offense, which isn't really saying much. So I love the Eagles, man. I think the Eagles beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. I think they get it done.
Eagles about 14-15-1 to win the Super Bowl right now. Horvy, any last thoughts, anything NFL, college, off the wall that you want to throw, your favorite bets, whether it's week zero, week one, or anything NFL, top of your head, what's your favorite last bet?
So I know that they're kind of becoming chalky. They're the Hard Knocks team, and I'm not just doing this to butter you guys up here, but I'm really high on the Bears. I know a lot of smart people right now are playing Chicago under 8.5 wins. I couldn't do it, man. No divisional opponent until week 11. I'm a big Caleb Williams fan, as I've talked about on the show like multiple times with Joe. I think Caleb Williams is going to be an absolute stud. I don't think any starting quarterback, any rookie quarterback, I should say, has ever walked into a better situation. Sure, Keenan Allen has to stay healthy, but even if he doesn't, Roma Dunze is going to be awesome, man. And DJ Moore has been so underrated for the last 6 years because he's had guys like Sam Darnold and PJ Walker throwing him the football. Caleb Williams is going to be the best quarterback he's ever played with, and it's not even close. And then on the defensive side of the ball, dude, I love the secondary. Second half last season, that was a top 10 defense. That's why I played Eberflus to win coach of the year at 14-1. I wouldn't touch it now at 8-1 now that he's the favorite, but I'm pretty high on Chicago. Like, I need to see Green Bay's defense improved before I believe that it's going to be improved. Like, Jeff Hafley takes over as coordinator. I know everybody loves Jordan Love. Jordan Love kind of stunk the first half of the season, was lights out the second half of the season. I think there might be some regression this year. Lions are going to be tough. If Ben Johnson wasn't back calling the plays, I thought there was going to be some regression and I was going to fade them. That might end up being one of the best offenses in the league. But if it's not next year, I think it's year two with Caleb that the Bears win 10 to 12 games. I really do believe that.
Bears win total sitting at 8.5. Heavy juice to the over. Hearing a lot of chatter about people playing the Titans week one money line. But we'll see how it goes. Horvy, appreciate it, man. That's Ryan Horvath, BetMGM Tonight host, Monday through Friday, 7 to 11 Eastern. Appreciate you, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. We'll talk soon. This is Early Odds on 670 The Score. Jake Hassan filling in for Joe Ostrowski. We're going to hit a quick break. We come back, keep the NFL talk going, hit a couple divisions. Stick around. Welcome on in Early Odds, 670 The Score. Jake Hassan still in for Joe Ostrowski. Shout out one more time to Ryan Horvath for joining us in the first segment to talk some college football and some NFL. Really appreciate his time. You could check out Ryan any day of the week, Monday through Friday, on BetMGM Tonight. That is from 7 to 11 Eastern time. Really appreciate Ryan stopping by. You can find him on Twitter at Ryan Horvath, H-O-R-V-A-T. Appreciate that from Ryan. But now, gonna spin it forward to, of course, you know what has to happen. It's Jake Hassan filling in for Joe Ostrowski. Obviously, we are going to talk a little bit of baseball here. I promise I'm not going to ramble for the last 30 minutes or so of this show, 25 minutes. I'm going to keep it tight. I promise. But not going to talk awards either, because I know the last, three, four weeks, we've talked about awards. But a couple of, as we enter the second half, the unofficial second half, obviously there's way fewer than 81 games left. It's the unofficial halfway point. We're after the All-Star break. You know what I mean? So want to get into a couple of win totals, a couple of playoff thoughts as we enter the unofficial second half of the MLB season. And I want to kind of start with something that I talked about, not kind of start with, I do want to start with, something I kind of talked about a couple weeks ago when we were talking about overall playoff thoughts, and as I just completely bumped the mic there, that's my bad. I want to talk about win total that caught my eye. The Houston Astros. Talked about them a couple weeks ago as a team that I thought could make a run, that was still a threat. And I still believe that because this Astros team now has clawed within one game of the AL West. And part of that is that the Seattle Mariners just can't hit whatsoever. Basically, their entire lineup hits like a bunch of backup catchers. Sorry for the ricochet shot at backup catchers. But they are. Their whole lineup is just absolutely atrocious, no matter how good their pitching is. And the Astros have just kind of found themselves here, and they continue to play really, really good baseball. Their win total is at 86.5 right now, a little bit of juice to the over, but I still like it. They have to go 37-29 the rest of the way. But their remaining strength of schedule is exactly 500. It's right in the middle of the league. So they don't have to face a ton of juggernauts. They're not getting overwhelmed. They have about a 500 record of their opponents going the rest of the way. So I think that sets up, especially the way that this team is playing, I think that sets up pretty well for the Astros. And here's the thing for me. The Houston Astros know what their window is. They know that they have this core together for one more year. I mean, Alex Bregman is a free agent. They have to start paying Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez. Justin Verlander ain't getting any younger. So they know that this is probably their last rodeo with this exact core, or really the core, still the core from 2015 or prior years. So I think they know that their window is still open, and they might make an aggressive move. If you remember a couple of years ago, I think this was 2021 or 2022, whenever Bryce Harper, no, this was even farther than that, because it was when Bryce Harper was about to enter free agency. It was before he signed with the Phillies. But regardless, a few years back, if you remember, the Astros were in on Bryce Harper at the trade deadline. They were pitching for trade packages for the Nationals. They were trying to bring him in to make a run at a World Series before he was a free agent. Maybe with the intent to sign him, but obviously he goes on and signs with the Phillies. And the Astros also did this last year with Luis Robert Jr. as well. They were trying to acquire him to play center field for them and get a star center fielder and get a star player to add to their lineup. And I think they're going to do it again. Like I said, they know that their window is open right now, and so I think that they're going to make a move, and I really believe that this is going to happen. Like, in my head, I don't know why, I have like an 88% confidence rate that this is going to happen. I think the Astros are going to trade for Vladdy Jr. because he's about to be a free agent. I believe, as I fact-check this, probably should have had this up before, but you know, that's business, baby. As I pull this up, Vlad Jr. is a free agent at the end of next season. So if they were to acquire him this year, they'd have the rest of this year and next year of control for Vladdy Jr. They also have a huge hole at first base right now. They've been playing Joey Loperfido and Jose Abreu and John Singleton, this cast of characters who just have not gotten it done. So they add Vladdy, who was an all-star, started the all-star game at first base for the American League. They bring him in. Also, oh, by the way, over the last month, Vladdy, 322, 337, 655 for a 992 OPS. 7 home runs in his last 20 games. Pretty good. So I feel like the Astros might make an aggressive move to bring in Vladdy. And I know that Christian Javier has been hurt and ineffective, and Verlander is currently on the IL. Who's to say that they don't swing a trade for someone like Garrett Crochet or Eric Fetty? I think that's very much on the table too for the Astros. Oh, by the way, Alex Bregman, he's remembered how to hit. 308, 368, 519 in July. It's pretty good. And so at third base, that fills a hole in the lineup as well. So I feel like the Astros are kind of cooking with gas here, and I feel like that, and I know it's, you know, oh, the Astros, we all like to hate the Astros. But when the money's in your pocket, who cares, you know, what you think of the cheating scandal or what you think of Jose Altuve? You're going to be counting the money. So they're 7-1 to win the AL. They're 16-1 to win the World Series. I really like the Astros. I think that they are a team to play on. I like their win total over 86.5. I think they're going to get better. And I think those are teams to target as we enter the second half here. So the Astros are one. Really like their futures. Really like their outlook going forward. Another one, another team that I talked about before a couple weeks ago when we were talking about second half thoughts. The Mets are at 82.5, and this was their preseason number two. 67 games left, and they would only have to go 34-33. They have the 10th easiest schedule the rest of the way. Now, I don't know if they're going to add at the deadline. Like, I don't know if they're going to go get, like, say, an Eric Fetty, or I don't know if they're going to go get like a Randy Arozarena or an Isaac Paredes, but I don't think they're going to sell. And the way that Francisco Lindor has been playing, unbelievable. The way that Mark Vientos has been playing has been unbelievable. I mean, he's been a revelation for them at third base. So for a Mets team, also they're going to get Kodai Senga back, probably, you think, at some point. He's had a really, but he's been throwing bullpen sessions. So it seems like he's going to be back, their ace, you know, their best pitcher. It seems like he's going to be back. A report today, actually, that he needs one more rehab start and then he'll be back. So the Mets adding a really, to be honest, Cy Young caliber pitcher here in the next probably week or so, 10 days, let's call it. They have a guy in Francisco Lindor who is playing, I don't want to say like an MVP, but like an MVP candidate. He'll be in the voting. Mark Vientos, been great, breakout player. So I think the Mets are a team to watch. I'm not saying bet them to win the World Series. Definitely not the division because the Phillies just have an insane lead there. But over 82.5 for a team that is definitely going to be getting better, and this was their number in the preseason, that makes me feel pretty good. And the schedule is the biggest thing. 10th easiest schedule in baseball the rest of the way over their last 67 games. Really like that as well. Another team that I talked about a couple weeks ago, the Diamondbacks, also at 82.5. They would have to go 34-31, so not about the same, you know, a little over 500. But here's the biggest thing for me, and this is why I said I was bullish on them, and I'll reiterate this point, to make the playoffs. And even if you're really bullish on them to win the World Series at 50-1, they're getting healthier. Their rotation has not been fully together all year long. Merrill Kelly's been out since April. Zach Gallen's had two injured list stints. Eduardo Rodriguez has not thrown a pitch yet for the Diamondbacks. But they are starting to get a little bit healthier. Merrill Kelly and Eduardo Rodriguez specifically have started throwing bullpen sessions, and the expectation is that both of them will be back within about the same as Kodai Senga, like next couple of weeks. Early August, quote unquote, is the thought for Merrill Kelly and Eduardo Rodriguez. Also, I'm going to say this too. Corbin Carroll, you know, going into the break, kind of seemed like he was starting to remember how to hit for power a little bit. You know, over his last 10 games, 3 home runs, 3 doubles, a couple RBIs mattered in there. So if Corbin Carroll is going to start to learn how to or remember how to hit and remember how to be a good player, I think that's going to be a huge boost for the Diamondbacks as well. So definitely like that win total over. They're at plus money. They're about plus 150 to make the playoffs too. They're one game out of a playoff spot right now. I like that look as well. I'm still bullish on the Diamondbacks. I just can't quit them. I can't. They're just, I love that team, the makeup of it. And if they're healthy, I really like it. Another team that I was bullish on before the season, and that I still am, because I do think they're a good team, the Kansas City Royals are 10-1 to win the AL Central. And I still think that this is a good look for the Royals, a team that is definitely going to be adding at the deadline. We got a report like a month and a half ago, when Luis Arias was traded from Miami to San Diego. Report came out that the Royals were very much involved in that process and that they were trying to acquire him. Report came out earlier this week that they were trying to acquire Tommy Pham from the White Sox. So the Royals are definitely going to be active at the deadline as well. And so for a team that, yeah, they're 7 games out, but for a team that has an MVP candidate in Bobby Witt Jr., another all-star in Salvador Perez and Seth Lugo and Cole Reagans, and a team that is willing to deal, I think I like the Royals here. I'm still bullish on them 10-1 to win the division. I like that look, especially because going back to the schedule, the Cleveland Guardians have the second hardest schedule in baseball in their remaining 67 games. They get the Phillies, they get the Orioles, they get the Dodgers, they get the Brewers. So I like that spot for the Royals because the Royals are about in the middle. They have about a 500 record, or their opponents do rather, have about a 500 record going forward. The Royals still have 6 games with the White Sox. They have 3 with the Angels, 3 with the Nationals, 7 with the Tigers. I mean, 13 games against the White Sox and Tigers still going forward. That's a lot. So the Royals, I'm still bullish on them 10-1 to win the division. I like that look. Want to switch to the NL Central as well? I think this is just the NL Central is so stupid, and the Cubs and the Reds have played better. I think both are 7-3 in their last 10 games entering the break. And the Brewers, I still just struggle to see it. And maybe that's me having a blind spot because they're just such a well put together team that it's just a machine. And Christian Yelich was an all-star again, and good for him. This is a rebound year for him. But I just don't see it when I look at this Brewers team, and I think that they're gettable. So the Cardinals at 5-1, I think, is a decent look for a team that's been playing really good baseball, only 4.5 games out, and a team that's been playing way better lately, and especially over the last month or so. And I mean, Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt can't be missing forever. You know, I'm pretty sure if you go to a grocery store in St. Louis right now, both of those guys' faces are on milk cartons. But it's not going to be like this forever. No way. And what do we know about the Cardinals? Even if they don't make a big splash move, they'll add fringe guys. And I mean, remember what they did with J.A. Happ and John Lester a couple of years ago, where those guys were terrible in Toronto and Washington, respectively, came to St. Louis and started pitching out of their minds. So I think the Cardinals are a team to watch. I know it's disgusting to say as we're here in Chicago, 670 the score, but, you know, I like money more than I like team allegiance. Sorry. So I think that the Cardinals are worth a look at 5-1 as well. They currently hold the second wild card spot, and I think that's a look. So those are a couple division looks that I like. And now this is the big one. And it's kind of a banger, and I might be insane. The New York Yankees to miss the playoffs is 20-1. And I know what you're saying, but Jake, they've been playing really good baseball all year. Well, we'll get to that. But they're 58-40, and they're only a game behind in their own division. How are they going to miss the playoffs? Over the last month, the New York Yankees have played absolutely atrocious baseball. It's been terrible, so much so that they've allowed the Boston Red Sox to climb back into the division race and into the playoff race. And for the Yankees, I mean, they don't have a lot of runway here. There's a lot of teams chasing them. And a couple that I talked about, like, yeah, the Yankees hold the first wild card, but the Twins aren't far behind, and the Red Sox are only 3 games behind in that race. And so, you know, with the Royals and Astros and Rays on their heels, I think the Yankees might be feeling the heat. I think that they could fall out of this. You know, I mean, if the Yankees fall all the way to that third, let's say they fall behind Minnesota and Boston. I mean, you got the Astros, who I think are going to win their division anyway, so that might flip. But, you know, right now, the Astros and the Royals on your heels, and I think both those teams are going to add. I think that's scary. And I think at that number, 20-1, I could kind of see the path there. And just hear me out. Gerrit Cole's ERA is over 5, and he's only made a handful of starts, but still, the FIP matches that. He has not thrown well. He's made it out of the 5th inning once. Carlos Rodon has an ERA of almost 10 over his last 7 starts. He has completely fallen apart. Marcus Stroman has an ERA over 5 and a FIP over 6 since June. Juan Soto's hitting .237 over the last month. I don't think they're going to trade for anyone. You're not hearing their names tied to anybody. I think they're just hoping that Anthony Volpe figures it out, and that Juan Soto gets back on track, and that Ben Rice continues to hit .400 for the rest of the season. Spoiler alert, he's not. So at 20-1, I think that that's a good shot to take at the Yankees, because this rotation is a mess. I just don't like the makeup of this team. Even if Soto figures it out, I said this before the season, great, you could score a million runs. How are you stopping a million and one being scored against you? It's just, I don't like, and the Yankees could still make the playoffs. That's why the number is 20-1. I think that they're a fine team, but I think that the path is there for the bottom to kind of fall out here and for them to tumble out of the playoff picture. Is it going to be a sweat? Is it going to take all the way to the end of the season? Probably. Yeah, absolutely. Like, this is going to take all year long, but I think that there's a path there for the Yankees. Now, they do get help because they still have a series against the White Sox and the A's and the Rockies. But they also still have a series left with the Phillies and the Orioles, and 7 left with the Red Sox. And those games haven't gone great for the Yankees this year. So I think that there is a path there for the Yankees to fall out, and at a huge number, it's going to get sweaty. And I'm not saying that this is a banger, you know, cash it now, but I think the path is there. That's all I'm saying with that. So just something to think about as we go forward. I promised I would keep it tight. Promised I would keep it to a minimum. That's all the baseball that I have for you today. Going to take another quick break. When we come back, going to go over some AFC East numbers, some things that I think are kind of interesting, some thoughts there as we close this edition of Early Odds. So stick around. Jake Hassan in for Joe Ostrowski. Going to hit a quick break. Be right back. Talk some NFL on the other side. Welcome back. Jake Hassan filling in for Joe Ostrowski here on Early Odds. This is 670 The Score. Once again, shout out to Ryan Horvat. BetMGM tonight, 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. You can find him hosting that show at Ryan Horvat on Twitter. He was great in the first segment, talked a lot of football, gave us a bunch of win totals, a bunch of conference thoughts with all of the conference realignment in college football, talked a lot about that, talked about how he's betting the expanded playoff, talked about some Heisman too. Listen, college football is in about a month, so it's time to start getting ready, time to start gearing up for that. So shout out to Ryan. He was great. If you missed that, go back and listen in the podcast when that gets posted, because he was great and gave a lot of insightful information for getting ready to bet this college football season. But for now, this is Jake Hassan. We're going to close it out talking some football here. And, you know, college football is right around the corner, and right behind that is going to be NFL. A couple weeks ago, I started to break down the NFC North for you guys, and we talked a lot of different situations, a lot of different props, some of those prices. And so I want to talk about here the AFC East, because I think it's very, very interesting, and I think it could go a couple of different ways. Outside of the Patriots, can we just get one thing straight really quick? Let's get this out of the way. Do some housekeeping here when we're talking about the AFC East. Not interested in the Patriots. Good. 27-1. No thanks. Think they could be a like two-win team in this year. Who knows if Drake May is going to start off the rip. New head coach. New way of doing things. No Belichick. So I want nothing to do with the Patriots, because I have no idea what this is going to be. So I'm just good. I'm just good on the Patriots. So we're going to keep this conversation to the Buffalo Bills, the New York Jets, and the Miami Dolphins. And we'll start there with the division prices, because right now Buffalo, the favorite, plus 165 thereabouts, the Jets closer to 2-1, and then the Dolphins higher than 2-1, longer than 2-1. And this is close enough, I guess, especially, you know, here in July, the first couple of weeks of July, before we really start looking at this stuff. But I don't really understand why the Miami Dolphins are longer than 2-1 in this division, because, you know, even though they got absolutely embarrassed by the Kansas City Chiefs in that, you know, Winter Wonderland game where it was the coldest game on record or whatever it was, record-breaking temperatures, let's call it that, in that game where they just completely turtled when they went to Kansas City. But, you know, what teams don't do that? And they have a really good coach. Mike McDaniel is awesome. If you haven't heard, and if you haven't been watching football for the last couple of years, or you've been under a rock somewhere, which, I mean, if you've been under a rock, welcome. We're glad you're back. But also, Tua Tagovailoa looked like an MVP candidate last year. And even if you blame that on, oh, well, it wasn't really him, it was the weapons around him. Okay, guess what? All of those weapons are still there. Jaylen Waddle, still there, just got a new contract. Tyreek Hill, still there. Devin Achane, still there, and probably going to be a little bit healthier, won't miss 10 games or whatever it was. Raheem Mostert, still there. So this Dolphins team, pretty good. They bring back literally everybody from last year, and they're longer than 2-1? Longer price than a Buffalo team that might have a lame duck head coach? And traded away its best receiver and didn't really bring in anyone to replace him. Great. Their tight ends are cool. Who else is there? And the Dolphins are a longer price than the New York Jets, who have a 40-year-old coming off a torn Achilles and another lame duck head coach. And granted, a really, really good defense. But and listen, if the Jets trade for Devontae Adams, okay, I could be starting at quarterback and probably make it work with that defense and Garrett Wilson and Devontae Adams. But that still doesn't make sense to me why the Dolphins are so much longer priced, about 40 cents longer of a price than the Jets. And they're almost a dollar longer than the Bills. I think the Dolphins are way closer to those teams than we think, right? Am I taking crazy pills? I feel like we're underrating the Dolphins. And maybe it's recency bias. Maybe it's because there's a bad taste left in our mouth from last year. But I feel like this Dolphins team is primed to take a step forward. Doesn't it? And especially consider this. If Tua doesn't get a contract extension, he's going to the last year of his contract. That's motivation, baby. And one thing about me, I love a good narrative. So if you're going to tell me that this guy is motivated for a new contract and to prove to the league that he's more than just the weapons around him, yeah, I'm going to buy into that. 100%. He's like, all right, watch, I'll go do it again. I'll go do it for a second year in a row, and then you'll have to pay me even more money. I firmly believe in that. And I mean, Tyreek Hill was saying last year that he wants to crack 2,000 yards. Assuming he doesn't twist his ankle on a weird play and stays healthy, he could totally get that. So I really like the Dolphins here. And I would even take some looks here at Tua to win MVP, because we talked about this. A quarterback-driven award has basically morphed into a quarterback award. I think it was, what, since 2000, we've had two running backs win the award, and they had to be historical seasons. So Tua at 30-1, I think is a decent look for MVP, especially, again, if he doesn't get that contract and doesn't get what he's looking for from the Dolphins. So I think that's something there. I think this division is a little bit mispriced. If I had to bet money on this right now, I'm not going to because, you know, it's July 20th. But regardless, I digress. If I had to, I would bet the Dolphins. I think that they should definitely be ahead of the Jets and definitely be closer to the Bills than they are. What is this infatuation with the Bills? Like, yeah, Josh Allen might be awesome and he might be an MVP and he's 9-1 when the MVP is among the favorites. But at plus 165 for a team that got rid of its star receiver, for a coach who, you know, has said some weird stuff and might not be great in game management on the field either, I just don't understand the infatuation with the Bills. Yeah, I know that they're a good team, but their win total is 10.5, and I'm not sure that they're going to get that over. I would play under if I had to. And the Jets, like, you just don't know what this is going to be. Like, who's to say that Rodgers is going to play a full season? He's coming off a torn Achilles. What if the other one goes out, you know? And I know I just said you could put me back there if they trade for Davante Adams. So, you know, who's to say that? Who is their backup anyway? New York Jets backup quarterback. It is, because it's not Zach Wilson anymore. It is, anybody want to? Oh, Tyrod Taylor. Okay. And well, Tyrod Taylor was with the Giants, and he was able to win games with that roster. So, okay, so you can put Tyrod Taylor back there and win some games, but does anyone really think that Tyrod Taylor is, like, winning you a playoff game? Does anyone think that's happening? So I'm low on the Jets still, and maybe that, as someone who grew up in Chicago my whole life, maybe that's a little bit of bias on my part. But, I mean, I got to see it from this team. Like, Bob Sowell might be a dead man walking in that position. Like, his odds for first coach fired are going to be, like, near the top there. Like, he's going to be the scapegoat for sure. You think Aaron Rodgers is going to be the scapegoat? No way. So I'm low on the Jets. I think the Dolphins are the team to bet in this division. And, I mean, the passing props over for Tua, I mean, I think if you wanted to bet him for most regular season passing yards at 10-1, I definitely think that that's something that could happen. Again, you look at the weapons. Over 4,000 and a half yards for Tua, absolutely interested in that. Receiving props for Tyreek, obviously very into that, especially if he's going to try if he's going to actively try for that 2,000 yard mark. I 100% am in on that. And his number is at 1,375 and a half. Over. This is assuming health, but I really like that over. So big Dolphins guy here. Surely that won't go wrong, right? Surely there's no way that goes poorly. So that's my thought there. AFC East, really big on the Dolphins. Don't see it with the Bills. And I don't want to assume health with the Jets. But that does it for another edition of Early Odds. I have been Jake Hassan filling in for Joe Ostrowski. Joe is back next week. You are free of my voice until he goes on vacation again. And then I'll be back. But for now, Joe will be back. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you for listening. Appreciate everybody. I'll see you when I see you. Until then, this is Jake Hassan, 670 The Score, Early Odds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.